with Dr. Keith Suter.
Good afternoon, Dr. Keith Suter. How are you?
Yeah, I'm very well. Thanks, Brent.
Another day, another dollar. Oh, here we go. Former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie has urged Donald Trump to provide proof of claims of voter fraud in the election or move on. Now, this is the most forceful terms yet, and he's a senior Republican. He's, you know, on supposedly Donald Trump's side, but he's come out and said, listen, Donald, if you can't supply proof of fraud, shut up and just move out of the White House, basically.
Yes, it's interesting how the Republican Party is turning against Trump. You've got to make a distinction between what I call Trump and Trumpism. So Trumpism are the issues that Trump very brilliantly raised in 2016, such as the loss of jobs to China, etc. That problem still remains for the Republicans and the Democrats to sort out. But Donald Trump himself, I think, certainly is coming to the end of that era. He may want to return to politics in 4 years' time. But I think clearly at the moment, he's just being shown the doors.
Can I ask you, Keith, why is Donald Trump claiming electoral fraud when he can't prove it?
He wants to delegitimize the election. He wants to be able to say for the next 4 years that he was robbed of the election by fraud. Now, he's not providing the evidence of the fraud, and generally speaking, there's been no evidence provided by anybody of any fraud. And yet, he's doing that to be able to say, I didn't lose the election, I was cheated out of it. And he's creating this narrative, which we saw before the election. We were discussing this, that he was going to try to downplay the significance of the election because he feared a defeat. And the defeat has come to pass, and now he is just simply saying, well, that was because of skullduggery on the part of the Democrats. I didn't really lose.
Will recounts change the result?
No. It's interesting. When you realize the magic figure is 270 needed to win, you know, the places in the so-called Electoral College, Biden is now at 279, and Trump is way back at 214. Now, there are still four more states to sort out, but it's impossible now for Trump to make up for that lost ground. And that's why his former colleagues, like Governor Chris Christie, are just saying to him, look, get out now, try to preserve a bit of face. Americans don't like losers, but they dislike bad losers even more. So Trump really ought to be minimizing the extent of his loss by just simply saying, yep, I lost, and then it moves on.
Recounts are not uncommon in the world of US politics, are they?
No, not at all. But I just don't see that Trump has any chance whatsoever of coming from so far behind.
Can the Supreme Court overrule Joe Biden's win?
No. No, you don't just rock up at the Supreme Court and say, we want you to get involved. The case has to go from, if you take the Florida example in the year 2000, the case has to go from the Florida legal system up to the Supreme Court. At the moment, there hasn't been enough happening at the state level in state courts for anything to move up to the Supreme Court. Now, I know what Trump's got in mind. Three of the judges there are there by virtue of his appointment. So he figures, with his transactional mindset, that they owe him something. But, of course, they are their judges for life, and they're worrying about the long-term prestige of the court. They're also well aware of the controversy in the year 2000 when the court appointed President Bush rather than getting him elected. I think the Supreme Court will want to try to avoid being drawn into this because they don't want to have a rerun of this, and they really don't want to have a cloud being put over the Supreme Court. The bigger problem for the Supreme Court is that it's now just so different from the rest of the American population. When you look at the voting composition this time round, that's not reflected to any large extent on the Supreme Court. And so in a sense, therefore, the Supreme Court may have its own crisis of legitimacy, because there'll be a lot of Americans saying the Supreme Court really doesn't represent mainstream United States. And so the judges there will need to find ways of identifying with the majority thinking in the United States, and will not want to go on a limb by getting involved in a highly controversial political process. Remember, the previous judges did that 20 years ago, and it still hangs as a bad cloud over the heads of the Supreme Court. They're not going to be in any hurry to repeat that.
Do you agree with this statement that the achievements that Donald Trump has had, the wins and the achievements in the past 4 years, could well be tarnished badly if he continues to peddle conspiracy theories and refuses to accept this as a legitimate defeat?
Yes, there is a saying in Hollywood that you're only as good as your last movie. And I think the problem for Trump is that what people remember about that Trump era is how he behaved on election day and immediately afterwards, rather than the previous 4 years in which he'd been in power. So that's the risk that he runs. He's just going to damage his own legacy by continuing to refuse to concede. Let me just say that there is no legal requirement for the defeated president to concede. This is a tradition that began at the end of the 19th century, when it was usually a big speech conceding, you know, praising the Americans for their wise decision, which you don't like, but you're going to go ahead with. That then opens the door to the victor to claim the victory. Now, this is simply a custom in American politics. There's no legal requirement. And Trump could go right the way through until January 20 without any sort of concession speech. It'll look bad for him, I think, but he could certainly do that. And he may even want to boycott the inauguration ceremony on January 20. So he won't be there. You can imagine George Bush Jr. will be there. Obviously Bill Clinton will be there. Barack Obama will be there. But he will be very obvious by his absence. And this is the sort of corner that he's now painting himself into, with even his own Republican colleagues being critical of his behaviour.
Do you believe the rumours that are being reported at the moment that family, including the First Lady, his wife, are trying to get him to accept defeat and deliver that concession speech?
Yes, I could imagine that would be going on behind the scenes, yeah. Absolutely.
Imagine being his golfing partner at the moment.
Well, that of course adds to this surreal notion of what's going on in Washington, because when we were covering the story yesterday on television, you know, Trump was actually out on the golf links, so somebody with a mobile phone would have simply told the president, "You've lost. Biden is now claiming victory." So he wasn't even in the White House. So it's almost as though he's getting ready for a post-White House career, I think, by taking up the golfing. He may well want to go back into the media. There's now a One America News Service, which is being set up, which is more conservative even than the Fox Network. So he may want to put some energy into that, because remember, when he leaves the White House on January 20 at 12 midday, he will still be the most popular and influential Republican politician there is. And the voting has shown that he's got a huge following. He actually polled more votes than Barack Obama did. Even though he lost, he had more people out. He has made politics interesting. Now, his problem was that he also made it interesting for the Democrats, a lot of people who turned up to vote against him. But what is intriguing is just simply this grasp that he's got on the public mind. And so that is a really potent force that he will could then spend time mobilizing. So in 4 years' time, he could have another go at the White House, or perhaps a member of his family, and set up a Trump dynasty. It'd be like you've got a Kennedy dynasty and a Bush dynasty.
Someone said to me yesterday afternoon, "Oh, thank God we can just go back to normal." And I said to them, "What do you mean by normal? What makes you say that?" And they said, "Well, you know, just the world has felt different with Donald Trump in power." Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. He has been the great disruptor. And I remember back in 2016, I made the prediction that the presidency will change Trump. You know, he'll just learn to behave himself better. And in fact, I got that wrong.
Yes.
Trump changed the presidency.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to ask you a question, Dr. Keith Suter. Do you know, this is a pub trivia night for Dr. Keith Suter, do you know how many vice presidents have become presidents?
I need to do some arithmetic before I can say that. Quite a few, certainly. And, of course, you're obviously thinking of Kamala Harris.
No. I'm thinking of Joe Biden, who was a vice president, yep. becoming president,
and Lyndon Johnson. There is very much a precedent for this. It may well be that Mike Pence will never get that. So sometimes yes, sometimes no.
I can tell you that Joe Biden is set to become the 15th American right. vice president to return to the White House as the president. The 15th.
And that's out of 46 yes. potential
yeah.
people.
Yeah.
Actually, it's a little more because they had two vice presidents at the time of Richard Nixon. So, yeah.
It's a few, isn't it? It is a few, isn't it? Now, I look at Australia and our political situation here, and look, if you go two-party preferred, it's either 51-49 or 52-48. So let's, for the argument, let's say it's 50-50, okay?
Yeah.
50 are for the Prime Minister and his party, and 50% are against. It's the same in America at the moment, yep. isn't it? It's 50-50.
It's yep, very divided country, and Biden is saying he's going to try to bring the country together. Well, I wish him the best of luck. Because clearly, you've got a lot of people who think that they haven't lost the election was stolen. So it's going to be very difficult for him to bring the country together. The only thing he's got in his favour is that he's very articulate, and I think there will not be the turbulence with Biden that we've had with Trump.
Yeah. What do you think would be the main priorities of a Biden presidency?
Well, the first one has got to be COVID. That is now becoming almost out of control now in the United States, given the number of infections that are taking place. You reach a certain inflection point, and it then becomes virtually exponential. So that is his first crisis. Then secondly, you've got the long-term systemic issues that Trump identified, which Trump could not sort out. One is, what do you do about China? China is clearly on a collision course with the United States. Will a war be averted? Or will you end up with some sort of collision between the United States and China? What do you do about the deindustrialization of the United States, the loss of blue-collar jobs? That's why the blue-collar Democrats decided to support Trump, because he was talking their language, but he wasn't able to solve their problem in his 4 years in office. What are you going to do about the big tech giants who basically run so much of the American economy, like Apple, Google, Facebook? Trump could not take them on, and I don't think Biden will, because a lot of Biden's money came out of Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
So he's even more beholden to those big corporations than Trump was. So these are really big systemic issues that I don't think Biden will be able to solve.
Because we've got a couple of minutes up our sleeve, Andrew sent me an email last week, and he said, the next time you're talking to Dr. Keith Suter, could you please ask him this question? Keith, your thoughts on the situation in Australia at the moment between the relationships of Australia and China, and there's been so much talk in the last week yeah. about all of the products that China are looking at banning from Australia and being able to sell to the Chinese. Your thoughts on that?
Yes, it's very worrying indeed, because we don't even have ministerial contact between Australian government ministers and their counterparts in Beijing. It's very worrying how the Chinese are treating us. And now some reasoning is that it's the basis that you kill the chicken to scare the monkey. In other words, you beat up Australia as a way of warning the United States to behave itself. Well, the monkey is not listening to China. It's going ahead still with its own tariff wars against China. So that certainly isn't working. And it's a much more aggressive sort of China on the world scene. If there's a lesson to be learned, is that we have made too much money out of China. We've become too complacent because we've done so well, and we ought to be looking for alternative markets. If Australia were to work with Indonesia, Japan and India, they would have a market between them the size of China.
Right.
So there's tremendous potential that you can get by going away from just relying on China. China is showing that it's going to be a very unreliable customer in the future. And as the Belt and Road Initiative gathers momentum and you get China opening up more of Africa, then China will just simply say to Australia, we don't need you anymore. We'll get all of our resources much cheaper out of Africa, and we won't have to put up with all the talks about human rights of Uyghurs, etc., which you Australians are fond of making. So that we've got to be using this current crisis as a way to refocus the future for Australia's trading relationship with other countries, and not be so reliant upon China.
So here's a classic example where we have to turn a negative into an opportunity, into a positive.
Exactly. Yep.
And the opportunity to diversify and sell our products to many other countries across the world rather than just most of the eggs into one basket. Do you think this could in long term backfire on China?
Yes, I think it is. Remember, China has damaged its brand because of the Wuhan virus, as Trump calls it. So brand China has already been badly damaged. I find now the amount of anti-Chinese comments that I'm coming across. And so on top of this, China is embarking on a trade war with Australia and also Canada and a few other countries as well. They're not only just picking on Australia. So the Chinese, I think, are really damaging their own brand. And they really ought to be on a charm offensive. The problem for them now will be Biden will come across as a sweet, reasonable, cooperative American president, and countries will go back to supporting the United States rather than looking for China as the alternative leader.
Dr. Keith Suter, it's always a delight and a pleasure to chat with you. Thank you for being generous with your time last week and this week in reference to talking about the American elections. We really do appreciate it, all right?
Thank you.
Thank you, Keith. Bye-bye. That's Dr. Keith Suter from Global Directions.